Sexy in Van City may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. We've got an awesome show set up for you tonight. So for all of those people out there who are wanting to connect, get intimate, have really awesome, meaningful, sexy relationships with lots of wonderful sex, lots of connection, and loving stuff, I'm going to ask you, how many times a week do you watch pornography? You don't have to tell me, but I'm really curious in terms of your thoughts about that. There's a lot of stuff in terms of pornography which isn't probably not serving you the way you'd like it to serve you if you are indulging in it. And this isn't a total down on its connection, down on sex show. It's actually really, really cool. I've got an amazing guest on tonight. I've had her on before. She's best known as the Tantra Teacher. She is in the Pacific Northwest, the lovely Tanya Diamond, and I'm very excited to have her back on the show. Welcome back.
Hello, and I'm excited to be here with my sexy radio voice.
Well, we are very, very glad to have you. And I know last time I had you on the show, we had a in-depth discussion in regards to, it came up, and today when I was looking at some of your Facebook posts, I'm like, we need to talk about some of this stuff. Just that I think our world is really trying to connect, and one of the things we talked about a little bit was about porn addiction, and it's one of the number one addictions that's just kind of on their rise on a world's level.
Well, definitely, and I want to start out by saying that there's porn and there's internet porn. And they're actually two very different animals.
Let's maybe start with explaining what the difference is to our listeners.
Sure. You know, porn, what a lot of people in a generation ago consider is, you know, the magazines that they used to pick up. They'd find the Playboy, even going to the sex shop and getting a VH, you know, what do they call those things? VHS?
Right. I forgot about those VHS tapes.
You know, something like that. It was where you actually, you know, almost had to, like, you had to show yourself to go get it. There was no real privacy. You had to go in a store. You had to do something like that. Or you found your dad's stash, your uncle's stash, your parent's stash. Mm-hmm. And that type of pornography, very different than today's internet porn. And the reason is today's internet porn, because of how our brains function, raises the dopamine levels way higher than natural sex raises the dopamine levels, and it raises it higher than the magazines did and those type of things did. So really when we're saying that there's a problem, it's internet pornography. And it's more of a problem for people the younger they view it. Now the average age of finding internet pornography is 9 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, why am I surprised about that, even with the whole thing?
At a time when the brain is so, you know, in so much growth phase and so and all of these imprint phases and all these things, so it's creating a much bigger problem. Like, if a man in his 40s or 50s is using internet porn every once in a while, it's probably not going to have the same effect that it has on so many men that are now, you know, I work with men that are in their 30s, you know, early 30s, who were basically raised on internet pornography. You know, they started on movies or whatever, and then, you know, as soon as they got a hold of the internet, that was that. And there's many reasons why it's such a problem, but part of it is the click-click, the easy ability of click-click, the never say the word right, but it's the autonomy, you know, nobody has to know you're doing it. You can get it on your phone. You can get it anywhere. You can sit in a parking lot and do it. You know, somebody told me once, one of my clients is an internet spy for a company, and her whole job is sleuthing out how many hours a week all the people that are employed there are using internet porn.
Wow.
And it's huge amounts, like 20 hours a week.
So on the employee's time, or employer's time, rather. So we're paying for people to get off, is what I'm hearing.
Well, and the unfortunate problem is the whole getting off part, too, gets harder and harder to do. And it leads down the path. You know, I started very unpopularly, I was talking about internet porn being a problem probably 12 years ago. I started noticing the men that were calling me to ask about their sex problems were starting to say things like, you know, I just, you know, I seem to be having a problem. Young men, erectile dysfunction is huge now with internet porn. Many, many men under 25, under 27 with erectile dysfunction issues because of internet pornography. You know, they can get it up for porn, can't get it up for real sex.
Wow.
And then a lot of men, you know, I started reading men's forums, and you can, I could see the problems. You know, men were asking, well, how much is too much? And is it, and there was the big thing like, well, masturbation's okay, but so that must mean internet porn's okay. But, you know, my viewpoint towards women is changing. And so, you know, a lot of men were saying to me, I'm starting to hate women. And, you know, it's a big misogyny thing going on. Men were talking about rape culture. You know, so I was actually seeing it in the men that were using it. Not to say women don't use it, but definitely it's more men. And I was seeing the discussions they were having. And, of course, the men coming to me to say, help me stop it. I tried to stop it. I can't stop it. What's going on?
Wow.
So, you know, 70% of divorce lawyers are saying, citing internet porn as one of the reasons, the relationship going awry. So it isn't a moral, you know, type of judgment here. It's an actual scientific problem. You can see TED Talks on it now. So science has finally caught up to what I've been talking about for years. And now we've seen men come forward saying, why did they give up internet porn, how hard it was to do it, and what changes in their life after they did.
Why do you think addiction in particular, it's, and especially this type of addiction, is so powerful? Is it because of the click, 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 where it kind of just kind of caters to the whole hunter thing?
Well, part of that, and part of how our brains are wired, and the fact that you're anchoring, you know, anchoring this whole pleasure mechanism to anything you want to see. Of course, people keep going to harder and harder and harder stuff. What used to be, you know, porn, today's internet, you know, today's porn is just so shocking compared to what people used to look at, too. So part of it is this ability to easily access it, the ability to the dopamine levels that raise, and, you know, the interesting thing is it's not the anticipation, it's the anticipation that is the addiction. So the dopamine levels raise the moment the anticipation of going to do it happens, and you know how tied in we are to our devices.
Very much
so. The moment you pick up your phone, your smartphone, if you've used porn on it, the dopamine levels start to rise. So you want it. You touch your computer. You know, any of these types of things. So partly there's that, you know, everybody does it, you know, thing, you know, that men always talk about, oh, everybody does it, it's normal, non-problem, without understanding, like gaming. Gaming addiction is big, too, right, with internet gaming addiction. So it's the same. It triggers into the same. But this, most people are anchoring to ejaculation. So they're anchoring it to this big pleasure center as well.
Wow.
It's hard all the way around. And then it's that feeling of disconnection from self. You know, I'm one of the few sex teachers that says that really fantasizing isn't such a great idea either.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because if our whole objective is getting off, like if we've turned all of sex into getting off as the goal, we miss out on so many things. If we have to fantasize to get off, it means we're not actually connected to our own pleasure.
Wow. It's interesting because we don't think about it that way, because fantasy is kind of a big word out there, to the point so many sex stores actually have the word fantasy in there.
Right, right. Well, and for years and years and years, sex therapists, sex teachers, everybody says, oh, it's fine. But let's take a scenario here. You have a couple, and they all know that masturbation is great. We know that fantasizing is great. We know that anything to get you there is great, right? Toys and this and that, other people, whatever. And it's always about getting there, getting off. So the whole goal is to get off. So sex is approached as that. So, you know, here's a couple. They're fooling around. She's like, I'm just not feeling it, so I'm going to fantasize. Do you think she's fantasizing about her lover? Do you think that's what she's really fantasizing about? No. So she's conjuring up some fantasy. Let's say it's about, ooh, you know, some guy that she really wants to have sex with. So, you know, he's having oral sex with her, her present time partner. She's off in fantasy land over here working towards that orgasm. You know, there's no connection between the two people at this point. She's in her mind with her eyes closed fantasizing. He's just doing his job to get her there. And then it's his turn. Now, what happens if he's having intercourse with her and he's having to fantasize, he's fantasizing about what he recently saw on internet porn?
Yeah.
So they're both just masturbating at each other.
And in a world where people are screaming to connect, it's actually really sad.
Right. So, once again, the whole goal, you know, the getting off, the, you know, if that's the goal, then sex is going to be boring. It's not going to be disconnected for the most part. And people are going to hunt for bigger, more interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And it typically isn't going to be, you know, their partner or quote-unquote vanilla sex. Or it's going to be bigger and bigger, bigger highs. We're always trying to go for bigger highs instead of realizing the best pleasure lies in more subtle.
Hmm. And I guess that's hard in a world that does say bigger is better.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, you know, let's say a tantra, you know, a lot of people with neo-tantra, that's being different than classical tantra.
Mm-hmm.
Neo-tantra is the sexual arts that we hear about so much when we think of the word tantra. But even they're talking about hour-long orgasm, two-hour-long orgasm, four-hour-long orgasms. But what people are missing in that part is that you're actually riding waves and peaks of pleasure connected to your partner.
Hmm.
You know, you're totally present in your body. You can't have an hour-long orgasm if you're checked out.
That's so true.
It's really about subtle. Like, people can have two-hour-long orgasms with nobody moving. You know, some of the videos that you might buy that show you how to get her off every time is like akin to hand rape. These people are pounding away on this woman until her bladder spasms and she quote-unquote ejaculates. And it wasn't because she was in pleasure as much as it was she was just being overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little different, physiologically overcome.
Wow. So how can one tell the difference in terms of when they think they're having a G-spot orgasm, where what I'm hearing is it may not actually be that, it might be something else?
Well, a lot of, you know, once again, we've sensationalized this G-spot orgasm and the ejaculation, and you have to understand that the glands that hold the fluid that women, you know, that when it's ejaculate versus bladder,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the glands are really small. You're going to get a teaspoon out of it. You know, some of the women that do the squirting videos, you know, they're back there pounding down tons of liquid and stuff like that. They may be ejaculating, but they're also urinating. You can't have, like, a gush going across the room from your Skene's glands.
That's true.
It's just not, you know, just common sense. Just go look at the anatomy and go, okay. Now, that's not to take away anything, because, quite frankly, there's some great orgasms that also cause the bladder to spasm. And they feel awesome, and that's great, and no problem, you know. But women shouldn't be held to this standard that if they're not squirting it across the room, somehow they're not doing it or they're failing.
Hmm.
So that's another thing that internet porn has given us, is this whole one more thing we can't do right.
Yeah.
So how to tell the difference is pretty easy. One is relaxing into pleasure, and the other is creating a force of pleasure.
Okay. So, I'm going to quote, I think I got this from you a long time ago, genital friction, staying away from it.
Right. So, mm-hmm. You know, as we chase orgasm, women have been told, well, the clitoris is where we need to go. So we've got all this hard action, fury happening on the clitoris, and the woman may tense her body and stop breathing, and, you know, what I call tension release orgasm, where you're really working for it, you got to bring your whole focus and attention to it, and once you get off, it's really short. A lot of women don't want to be touched again. It's kind of like a male ejaculation in the sense that you're kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, so being pushed into versus allowing the energy to come to the fingers.
Hmm.
You know, the lighter, the lighter, the lighter, the less. And this is something that a lot of people don't play with, even with intercourse or with G-spot hand or anything, but like less, allow the body to really move towards the pleasure versus be pushed into the pleasure.
Hmm. What are some of the most common things that you hear sometimes from people who approach you who want to learn more about Tantra and take your workshops?
What do I hear the most?
Mm-hmm. Especially in this day and age with people just screaming for connection.
Yeah. So men typically want to understand why their women don't want to have sex. And women want to understand why it is they're not interested in sex because the man doesn't get they want to be connected.
Hmm.
So the women are looking for the intimacy. The men are looking for more sex. Ultimately, men are looking for connection, but they typically haven't made the bridge that, you know, sex isn't the only way to show love.
Hmm.
Or sex isn't the only way to get affection needs met. You know, so for most men, if they don't have an education, they show love and show affection and show all the things via the sex act. But here comes another issue. Today, we're very anxious. Most of society is through the roof in anxiety. I didn't see this much anxiety 10 years ago in people. But I guarantee you that almost everybody is, their anxiety levels are so high, they don't even recognize that they're anxious. It's just like a norm. But with that anxiety comes the wanting to medicate away from the anxiety, which is why we get the addictions, why we get people who use orgasm as a stress reliever.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got a man who may be confusing his desire to want to have connection. He's not trying to find connection, he's trying to get off. The woman feels that energetic difference between being used to get off in and wanting to, you know, make love. So, you know, if I ask a man, do you actually want to have sex with your wife, or you're just trying to have sex, or do you want to make love to her?
Hmm.
Most of them are trying to get off.
And then they wonder why everybody's...
There's a difference.
There's a huge difference.
Right. And for women as well, more and more women are using, you know, orgasm as a stress reliever. And then that becomes the common medication tool, you know. It's like, so that takes it all away from anything to do with connection.
Mm-hmm.
So men are looking for more sex. Women are typically either looking for better sex. And every human wants better connection, whether they realize it or not.
I think it's part of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that need to feel loved and respected and connected to community. It's actually part of self-actualization.
And, you know, so what do we do today with, you know, part of my rant on my wall today, you know, on Facebook was the fact that I said, after I was saying, okay, internet porn is going to be a problem, we're going to have a problem. It's going to be a problem, a sexual societal problem. And it's driving a demand, and it's driving the desire for more and more, and interesting and harder core stuff is going to drive this demand that's going to end up creating a huge problem in prostitution and sex trafficking, child pornography, you know, pedophilia, not even pedophilia. Pedophilia is like somebody who's minor attracted is born that way. We're actually creating it, men who are, you know, moving in that direction even though that's not their thing. And so this is a bigger problem. And I know it sounds alarmist, and it sounds like, you know, maybe fanatical, and it sounds like, oh, my God, this woman's just down on stuff. You know, and here's what I say about internet porn. If you can what I say, take the 30-day I'm not a porn addict challenge, okay?
Hmm.
If I say I want you to stop using porn for 30 days, do you white-knuckle it? Do you like, oh, my God, do you come up with defenses? Well, I can do that, blah, blah, blah. Just try it. 30 days. Don't use it. Don't think about it. And if you're white-knuckling it today, you know, to 30 days and looking for that 31 day that you can start using it again, obviously there's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't have sex now that you're not thinking about it, or you lost all your arousal, you're like all of a sudden looking around saying, well, I'm not turned on about anything anymore. These are all indicators that it's kind of taken over your sex life.
Yeah, that's huge.
And this is women, too. You know, more and more women are starting down that track as well, especially really young women who believe that's how you have sex now. You know, anal sex used to be one of those things that everybody would be lucky if they got from their partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's considered okay on the first date.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's, you know, a gangbang used to be four men, you know, one for each. And now gangbang is seven men or eight men. Things have just really escalated.
Very much so, it sounds like.
Yeah. And most parents or people are shocked if they haven't seen internet porn. They might once again think, you know, she's just being an alarmist. But you go on and hit free porn, and you don't just get a scene of a couple having sex anymore. It's like 150 thumbnails of daddy does daughter, barely 18, gangbang this, choker that, this, blah, 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 and it's all right there.
Mm-hmm.
This is what your kids are accessing.
Wow.
So what do? We want connection. We want healthy sex lives. We want to have quality sex with each other. Really, we can't keep driving that industry.
No.
I think it's going to take us down in so many ways. You know, and I do believe that, you know, supply and demand is something there. I do believe if you're using it and you're starting to go to harder and harder stuff, that means somebody that you're watching, is not having a good time. You know, if nobody grows up thinking, I want to be a sex worker. I want to be a sex slave on a video.
Yeah.
And these are the realities of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's huge. There was a great article actually just in Psychology Today in regards to porn addiction. His name was David Mura, and it was described a male's grief, notes on the pornography and addiction. And it was actually a really, really great one, which what I liked about it was it actually was written specifically for the person who wrote the article that showed up in Psych Today was Ravi Chandra. And what was really cool was actually had some pointers in about how to take some of the information from the essay into actually using it in terms of practice for people who are counselors, which I thought was pretty cool. As well as I figure if it's in Psych Today, it's becoming way more mainstream. So unfortunately,
yeah. Our kids' ideas about sexuality, you know, how do they become sexually healthy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one 12-year-old girl said to me, she was at a bar mitzvah, and the day before she saw me, and then she said, Tanya, you know, what do I do? I was at this bar mitzvah, and all these boys are watching internet porn on their phone at a bar mitzvah. And she said, I happened to walk over to them, and I looked over their shoulder, and I thought, oh my gosh, because I was shocked. My body felt shocked about what I was seeing. And she goes, and then I had to wonder, you know, I haven't even had my first kiss, and how excited are any of these boys going to be about that when they're looking at this and expecting what they see?
Mm-hmm. That's.
And I thought that was quite sad.
It's really sad.
You know, so parents, if you're listening to me, I know it's a hard thing because, you know, a lot of people are using it, so then it maybe feels kind of, you know, hypocritical to tell your kids not to do it, but it's not your grandpa's porn.
No.
Not the Playboy, you know. it's, you know, there are ways. I told my daughter, my daughter's 10,
mm-hmm.
and I've already educated her and said, honey, someday somebody's going to show you people having sex on their device, and I want you to just say thanks, but, you know, I don't need to watch that. And if you're curious about how people make love and how sex happens, other than obviously what she already knows, that I've told her, but if you actually visually want to understand that and see that, I said, please ask me, and I will find you something that's appropriate to watch. So that might, you know, somebody might say to me, I can't believe you would show your daughter a video of sex or something. And it's like, you know, the curiosity, if they're curious and I understand the curiosity, would I rather show them a sexual encounter, in a sexual education video of loving couple making love, or have her watch porn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
the answer is obvious to me.
Well, I think it's obvious because in that way you can actually have a frank discussion. And I think there's still a lot of shame and stigma about sexuality in our society just in general. And so the more we can do to have those conversations where our kids can feel safe, where they can come and chat with us about sexuality, I think is key.
Yeah, and we need to not think that conversations around sex start at 12 or 13.
No.
I mean, you remember what I said, the average age is 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your kids are seeing, and you know, some kids are traumatized by it. I mean, because like I said, it's not just two people making love. You've got these weird angles now because it's all about the camera, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's these weird, strange angles that nobody ever does. There's no kissing or really, or, you know, hands. Like, it's hands-free sex because everybody's trying to hold positions that are just abnormal.
Yeah.
So where this human contact, where we love each other and touch each other in a loving way, isn't just happening at all.
So how early do you think we should be educating kids about sex?
Well, you know, my daughter, when kids start asking questions, you answer their questions. You don't need to elaborate on them. But I remember my daughter was, when she was three, she had asked me, you know, she had said, oh, somebody said that there were two cats that were boyfriend and girlfriend and they were going to have babies. And I said, okay. And she said, and how does that happen that they have babies? Because they got married? And, you know, so already in society, she's heard something, you know, marriage and kids, right? So there's societal things that she's hearing about. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, honey, first of all, they have sex. They make, you know, they have sex. But I didn't even use the word make love because that's confusing to kids, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have sex, and the boy, you know, boy cat puts his penis in the girl cat's vagina, and he puts sperm in there. And that's how they have a baby. And that's nothing to do with marriage or boyfriend or girlfriend. You don't need to be married to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because little girls, we always say you're going to grow up and you're going to make love. This sex is something to do with somebody you love, right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty confusing when you have sex with somebody and they don't love you, that you presume it because you were told that. So, I mean, just basic things. But then later on, she's like, one day she goes, Mama, she sat down in front of me and said, Mama, how does a baby come out of here? And she's pointing to her vagina, and I'm like, because it's pretty small. And, you know, this is, she's open, right? And I said, well, honey, you know, you're a child. You know, that wouldn't happen. You, of course, you grow. Look how much bigger I am than you are. And, of course, then she's like, can I see? I'm like, oh, my God. Can I just breathe through that? Okay, I think I can do this. You know, it's like, whew, okay, just so you know, yes, I'm a sex teacher, and yes, I teach all this, but, you know, to like that, okay. And she's curious, you know, and she wants to understand. And, you know, one day she asked me, this was when she was six. She goes, Mama, if you can't have babies anymore, why do you still have sex?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm in menopause, right? And I told her that. So, you know, we've had talks about period and menopause and different things. And, you know, it's my take on when she asks me stuff is, you know, I always tell her it's part of an adult healthy relationship. She grabbed a book one day. I think she was eight. I happened to be referencing this one book, and it's an illustrated book of sex. And she grabbed it, and I thought, what do I do? Do I take that away from her? What do I do? And I just thought, well, I'll just sit back and wait. So she's kind of flipping through the pages, and she's kind of looking at me and looking at the page. And then she'll say, why is he looking at her butt? You know? Well, that's a normal part of an adult healthy relationship. He likes her body. And she goes, oh. And she's flipping, and then all of a sudden, I thought, oh, my gosh, here it comes. She stops, and there's an illustration of a woman having oral sex with a man. You can't see the penis in her mouth, but it's pretty clear, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you know anatomy, what you're looking at. She looks at it for a minute, and then she looks up at me with her brows furrowed, and she goes, does she have her mouth on his penis? And she's, like, horrified. And I said, yeah, honey, what's a normal part of an adult healthy relationship? And I'm wait for it, because here it comes. She looks at me. She looks at my husband. I'm thinking, oh, no. And she goes, do you do that? You know, just like completely like.
Horrified.
And I'm looking at my husband, and he's looking at me, and I go, honey, it's a normal part of an adult healthy relationship. And she closes the book and walks off. So, you know, it's like. It's not easy for any of us because we're not raised openly to speak normally about things,
mm-hmm.
right? And if the penis is the same as an elbow, you know, penis, elbow, breast, head, whatever, there's no charge to that, then they don't have a charge on it. Kids are sensual, not sexual, until they appropriately gain that perspective. But
and
we're scared.
We are scared. We really
are. You know, we're scared to say, look, but now I have a daughter who will come to me. She'll say anything to me. Oh, somebody in the schoolyard called me a lesbian. And I had to tell her it wasn't true, of course, because I, you know, although it's fine, I tend to like boys.
Mm.
She She's very matter-of-fact. She, you know, has an education that's appropriate for her age. And so when you said age, so she's 10, but she knows more and more accurate facts than probably most kids.
Hmm.
But because of that, when kids start talking about things like they do, you know, and she's like, oh, so-and-so said they were having sex with so-and-so. And I'm like, how old are these kids? And she says, well, you know, they're 9. And I'm like, do you think they're having sex? And she goes, no, I think they don't know what they're talking about.
Hmm.
You know, who's going to educate your kids? You want the kids on the playground educating your kids?
Mm-hmm. So how do we replicate that besides getting you doing webinars like crazy to educate parents all around? So then
first we have to come to grips with the fact that we're sexual human beings, okay? What do you want for your kids? I would love my daughter at an appropriate age to have an awesome sex life,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't want her to not have a great sex life in her life. She's going to be an adult far longer than she is a child. I want her to be respectful of her body. I want her to honor her body. Nobody's going to take advantage of her because she already has an education. Nobody's going to try to come up and say, it's okay if I touch you because blah, 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 right? She gets that this is her body and what's appropriate and what's not. We're waiting too long. We need to get comfortable. We need to start talking. You know, nothing's worse than the parents that come to me that says, honey, you told me to talk to my kid, and I tried to talk to him now when they're 12, but I just found out that my kid's been using porn for 2 years.
Yeah, like you said.
You know, and I'm just having the birds and bees talk with them. It's like they know more. There was a great study, I think in Britain, where they got a bunch of kids together, and I think they were middle school, and sat down and ask them candid questions about sex. And the interviewer was shocked because the kids knew more things than they did, than the interviewers did. More descriptive things, more varied things, more things, like things that the interviewer had never done in their adult life.
Wow.
Okay, so we are behind the eight ball. We're out of touch. The kids are on devices. If you don't think that your kid has seen something, people turn their kids loose with devices when they're 8 and 9 years old.
That's right? Very true.
My daughter keeps saying, well, I'm the only one without an iPhone, you know, and I'm like, and that's okay. You know, it's all right. It's not a necessary thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do we do it is we have to get brave. We have to talk to our kids. We have to be proactive.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, your kids are going to need you. I mean, being influenced at early ages by other things, it's going to wreak havoc in their whole life. You know, this is not just about the time your kids are with you. This is about their whole life as sexual beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for instance, you know, nowadays, I guess Seattle, I just found out, Seattle's number 3 in sex trafficking.
Really?
In the country. Number 3. That's shocking, I guess. What does that mean? 500 to 800 girls around the age of 12 are being used as sex slaves every day.
It's heartbreaking. I don't know if it's because with Seattle, it's similar to Vancouver, we're on the coast, so I don't know if it's easier in that sense because of.
Maybe it's what we're doing kid-wise. I mean, look, if kids, so there's two ways that they get trafficked. One is they actually just get flat-out kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're walking down the street with some friends, and bang. First of all, I want to know why 12-year-olds are walking down the street alone with their friend. First of all, that would be like my daughter wouldn't be doing that because I know what's out there. Paranoid, maybe, but, you know.
So better to be paranoid and alive.
But more typically is the child that doesn't feel connected, is the teen, the young teen, that does not feel a connection to their family.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very easy prey for some man, for some older teen, to come along and to befriend and to create love relationship, which then leads to them being pulled into that world.
Mm-hmm. It's the recruitment.
If you read about how it's done, and sometimes it's done by older women. Sometimes older women are the ones that are pulling these girls into this situation, all by the allure of feeling grown up and feeling cared for. They use trust. They use love. They use connection to pull them in.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kids, our kids, are hungry for connection, and we're not giving them enough of it.
It's very, very, very true. And what's scary for listeners out there who may think that this is something fresh, something new, it's not. If you can believe it, there was actually an episode in The Facts of Life, which was, I'm dating myself now, an 80s show, where they tried to recruit Tootie into, when she was one of the characters in the show, into sex trafficking. And I was surprised because I kept thinking it was such a new thing. In Canada, for the Canadian Women's Foundation, they say that the average age of entry into street life is actually 12 years old.
Right.
And I imagine it's probably similar in the States as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, like I said, there's two ways. You know, one is kidnapping and the other is luring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kids are not going to be lured if, one, they're, you know, they're getting that connection that they need from home, and they feel connected to a tribe and a society. They're not going to be so easily lured. You know, one of the things that I told my daughter, and this is a way of, you know, we're growing up in a modern world where things like this happen. I've taught my daughter at a pretty young age, if anybody ever tells you that you have to do what they say because they'll kill your parents, because that's one of the things they tell kids,
mm-hmm.
right? I say it's not true. They can't do that no matter what they tell you. So don't ever let that influence you. You know, and that may seem like, wow, you can't believe that you'd have to tell a kid that. But we have to kind of like open our eyes and see what's happening. We're so disconnected with all our technology,
mm-hmm.
you know, to see kids like, you know, in the car, the parents got the earbuds in a restaurant, everybody's got their phone. You know, it's like, just like, where are we influenced? Our kids are peer influenced. They're not influenced by us as much anymore.
No.
And that peer influence pulls them away. Kids learning from kids is not the ideal. That's not where any good judgment lies. Kids are supposed to learn from their parents.
And going
their elders and their tribe, right?
They are. And as you said, though, going full circle from the very beginning of our discussion with porn addiction on the rise, the fact that kids are getting exposed to pornography and the average is 9 years old. It really shapes what they expect in terms of sexuality, and not necessarily in a healthy way.
Right. So we need to get connected
mm-hmm.
as parents. The parents need to be connected, but we also need to be connected to our kids. This is, quote unquote, if there is a quote, you know, a mm-hmm. cure. There needs to be a cure, but if there is a turnaround, if this is a societal turnaround, because it's a societal ill. We need connection now more than ever,
mm-hmm.
and we need to be influenced. We need to be influenced in our tribe, not the TV, not the media, not the other kids, not the porn. We need to influence
mm-hmm.
our families. So we need to put down some of our devices.
And
you know, kids believe that the devices are more important than they are.
Mm-hmm.
As my daughter has told me, I've asked her, you know, what do your kids think about this and that? And it's like, well, you know, parents are always on their computer, parents are always on their phone, parents are always on the whatever. You know, everybody's communicating that way. You don't have to be that busy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't.
No, it's very true. So what's next for you?
I have a book coming out here probably in the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the whole connection and healing and everything else like that, this book is actually called Riding the Phoenix,
mm.
Unleash the Power of Your Soul. And it's first part is autobiographical for the challenges that I've overcome in my life, which are many, 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 and pretty extreme things as well. And the second part is the how-tos, like the processes that I've developed in doing that. So healing from past trauma, healing from old patterns. So it's pretty big because it's a pretty big reveal. It's really, really vulnerable. The first part is very, very open and very vulnerable. And my hope is that people will be able to see that the stuff, some of the stuff that any of the stuff that I've overcome and the ways it happened, that they can do it as well. And when we can do that, when we can heal, because there's, you know, victim, survivor, and what I call restoration. Mm. I'm trying to move people out of survivor mode, which is where they're still triggered and still need support groups and still identify as a victim of or used to, or a survivor of,
mm-hmm.
to this idea of restoration, where we are whole again. It is part of our lives. We accept that these things happen, but we are no longer our story or our, you know, a rapist can take an hour or two or 6 hours of your life, but most people give them their whole life.
That's very true. That's very,
or
very true.
Any trauma that we suffer. So that's what's next, riding the phoenix and getting that out and staying up on my soapbox about these things that I feel so passionately about, because I really, really, really want to see people loving each other and having amazing, awesome, connected sex, which doesn't mean you have to sit in ritual all the time or have romance all the time. It's not, you know, it's about texture in life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about, you know, healthy, real expression, you know, speaking truth to somebody, being okay with how you feel, and getting rid of all these triggers. And these addictions are just, basically any addiction is just a way to numb and ignore the uncomfortable feelings that you're having. It doesn't have to be really tough to get through that and back on track.
Mm-hmm. That gives me a lot of hope, because I know there's a lot of people out there who are dealing with addiction, sometimes a lot of loss of hope.
Well, yes, and let me tell you that there's, you know, you can go for porn addiction if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, I do have a problem. If somebody's told you have a problem with it, if you've lost relationships because of it, it doesn't matter if you're using it once a week or once a month, if there can still be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, you know, how often you use it, it's how you relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've read the things and they're telling you to stop masturbating and stop doing this and stop doing that. I'll tell you, I have a very simple program for it, and it's gangbuster work. And so, you know, call, find me, learningtantra.com. Ask me and I'll help. But your whole life will turn around, really, in a much, much better, healthier way. And so,
and I think that's something that people need to realize, no matter where you are in life, that you can turn things around. It can change in any moment. You just need to make a choice and explore your options, see what's there. Tanya's an amazing, amazing, amazing teacher and has so much wonderful gifts to share. So I'm going to encourage you, please,
thank
check
you
out some. You're welcome.
Well, yeah, and I know it sounds, you know, I know it sounds really harsh. But if I have nothing but compassion for anybody involved in anything that's creating shame, guilt, or problems in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at sex trafficking, you know, I realize every single person involved in that is in trouble, in a way, you know. The people that are buying and selling, you know, they are in serious issue as well. You know, it's a problem, and it's a problem because it doesn't serve humanity. It doesn't serve anybody that's doing it, even if they think money is the outcome. It's destroying them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've worked with people that have done a lot of things in their lives, and I have to tell you that, like, we all suffer. When one person is suffering, we're all suffering. And some people have, quote, lost their humanity or their connection to their compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And that can come back as well.
Which, if everybody could embrace that, can you imagine how amazing the world would be?
It would be amazing, and I'll have to say that, you know, even in an amazing world, there is still going to be chaos, and there's still going to be stuff, because if you look around at nature, which is kind of my guru, there's death and destruction and chaos, and there's beauty and ugly and mundane, and we're all part of the same thing. You know, we are never going to be 100% love, because there were never 100% anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we can raise our bar on our integrity, on our way that we have our needs met, our strategies, so to speak, of how we get our needs met. We can definitely raise the bar on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we do that, I think we will definitely bear the fruit of that. But right now, I'm telling you, I'm pretty scared. You know, there was a thing going around on the Facebook, like, if there was one thing in the world you could get rid of, what would it be, you know, to help the world or whatever? And I wrote, people. We're laughing because here I'm supposed to be the spiritual teacher. Like, what did I just say? You know, but like in a way, it's kind of like, you know, I'm an optimist, but I'm a realist and I'm an optimist. And I look and I think, oh my gosh, you know, we have such a huge, huge, huge illness going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how do we rally together? How do we solve this? And it has to start self. So if you're looking at this and you're like, Tanya, I was reading your wall and I just can't even be in that kind of pain. I cannot read that stuff. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know about it. I don't care if my husband's using porn. I don't care what's going on because I can't do anything about it. I need to let you know that what you need to do is you start with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is bring compassion to yourself. Bring honesty and authenticity to yourself. Like, what are your needs? If you have compassion for everybody else, but you're not taking care of yourself, that's not helping. That's part of the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of integrating a total human, this is what Riding the Phoenix really is about. Help yourself first. Put on your own oxygen mask first. Right? You don't have time to heal? Well, I say I don't have time for all the other crap that's happening.
Hmm.
You know, how much time do you have to feel like crap, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but really, look to yourself first, and when you heal, you put your own oxygen mask on, you heal, then you can start addressing your family.
Hmm.
You know, pulling your kids in close, really listening to what they're saying. Kids get disconnected because they don't feel like anybody's hearing them. You know,
which leads to
hear
so many.
Them. Hear your spouse. Really stop. Hear your spouse.
Hmm.
Ask them what's going on. You know, connect back up. We can do this. We really can.
Hmm.
I believe it.
I believe it too. And I'm excited. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It's been incredible. And yeah, I'm excited to hear about your book when it comes out, and I hope I get to read a copy so,
yay,
so yeah. I can have you back on again to talk about that, which would be fabulous. And in terms of for workshops coming up and things, are you going to be in Vancouver anytime soon or anything coming up that we can drive over the border to come and take?
I have not, you know, I've got to get some stuff on my calendar. I had a very bad car wreck last year, and it's taken me quite a while, so I haven't really taught for a while because I've been working on that recovery.
Okay.
And then getting the book going. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my website will have lists of workshops, and I've been doing a lot of teleseminars, and I'm right now in the middle of a six-month group coaching program that I ran that I will probably be interested in doing some more things like that as well. So, you know, get to learningtantra.com and poke around, see what's on there, get on my list so that you can keep abreast of what's going on. And I'm also available for private coaching as well.
Which is fantastic. Thank you so much. And any last words that you'd like to share for people?
Yeah, just please take care of yourself. You know, take care. More people just need to really connect to themselves and really, yeah, get aware of yourself so that we can move forward and help the world. And talk to your kids. Talk to them. And listen. More importantly, listen.
Even when it feels hard.
And love your partner. Yay!
It really is. Sometimes I think love is the answer to a huge thing of the world. Like where it would solve a lot of problems.
We can't love unless we love ourselves, and that's cliche, I know, but...
But it's cliche because it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I thank you for having shows like this and, you know, taking on some of the edgy stuff because I know most of the time it's much easier to just stick our head in the sand and go look at another rainbow and puppy and kitten poster than deal with some of the harder realities that are going on.
That's very true. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He will be guiding you through the wee hours with his amazing music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Everyone have a beautiful night and be safe, connect, and love deeply, especially starting with you and the people that you care about the most, and really listen to them. Thank you.